Chapter 2. As he took his wife home and drove up Pleasant Hill to Tasbro's, Doremus Jessup meditated upon the epidemic patriotism of General Edgeways. But he broke it off to let himself be absorbed in the hills, as it had been his habit for the 53 years out of his 60 years of life that he had spent in Fort Beulah, Vermont. Legally a city, Fort Beulah was a comfortable village of old red brick, old granite workshops, and houses of white clapboards or gray shingles, with a few smug little modern bungalows, yellow or seal brown. There was but little manufacturing, a small woolen mill, a sash and door factory, a pump works. The granite, which was its chief produce, came from quarries 4 miles away. In Fort Beulah itself were only the offices, all the money, the meager shacks of most of the quarry workers. It was a town of perhaps 10,000 souls, inhabiting about 20,000 bodies. The proportion of soul possession may be too high. There was but one comparative skyscraper in town, the 6-story Tasbro building, with the offices of the Tasbro and Scarlet Granite quarries, the offices of Doremus's son-in-law, Fowler Greenhill, M.D., and his partner, old Dr. Olmsted, of lawyer Mungo Kitterick, of Harry Kinderman, agent for maple syrup and dairying supplies, and of 30 or 40 other village samurai. It was a downy town, a drowsy town, a town of security and tradition, which still believed in Thanksgiving, 4th of July, Memorial Day, and to which May Day was not an occasion for labor parades, but for distributing small baskets of flowers. It was a May night, late in May of 1936, with a 3/4 moon. Doremus's house was a mile from the business center of Fort Beulah, on Pleasant Hill, which was a spur thrust like a reaching hand out from the dark-rearing mass of Mount Terror. Upland meadows, moon-glistening, he could see, among the wildernesses of spruce and maple and poplar on the ridges far above him. And below, as his car climbed, was Ethan Creek flowing through the meadows. Deep woods, rearing mountain bulwarks, the air like spring water, serene clapboarded houses that remembered the War of 1812 and the boyhoods of those errant Vermonters, Stephen A. Douglas, the Little Giant, and Hiram Powers, and Thaddeus Stevens, and Brigham Young, and President Chester Alan Arthur. No, Powers and Arthur, they were weak sisters, pondered Doremus. But Douglas and Thad Stevens and Brigham, the old stallion. I wonder if we're breeding up any paladins like those stout, grouchy old devils. If we're producing them anywhere in New England, anywhere in America, anywhere in the world. They had guts, independence, did what they wanted to and thought what they liked, and everybody could go to hell. The youngsters today, oh, the aviators have plenty of nerve. The physicists, these 25-year-old PhDs that violate the inviolable atom, they're pioneers. But most of the wishy-washy young people today, going 70 miles an hour but not going anywhere. Not enough imagination to want to go anywhere. Getting their music by turning a dial. Getting their phrases from the comic strips instead of from Shakespeare and the Bible and Veblen and old Bill Sumner. Pep-fed flabs, like this smug pup Malcolm Tasbro hanging around Sissy. Ah. Wouldn't it be hell if that stuffed shirt Edgeways and that political Mae West gimmick were right, and we need all these military monkey shines and maybe a fool war to conquer some sticky hot country we don't want on a bet, to put some starch and git into these marionettes we call our children. Bah. But rats, these hills, castle walls, and this air, they can keep their Cotswolds and Harts Mountains and Rockies. D. Jessup, topographical patriot. And I am a dormouse. Would you mind driving on the right-hand side of the road? On curves, anyway, said his wife peaceably. An upland hollow and mist beneath the moon, a veil of mist over apple blossoms and the heavy bloom of an ancient lilac bush beside the ruin of a farmhouse burned these 60 years and more. Mr. Francis Tasbro was the president, general manager, and chief owner of the Tasbro and Scarlet Granite quarries at West Beulah, 4 miles from the fort. He was rich, persuasive, and he had constant labor troubles. He lived in a new Georgian brick house on Pleasant Hill, a little beyond Doremus Jessup's, and in that house he maintained a private barroom luxurious as that of a motor company's advertising manager at Grosse Pointe. It was no more the traditional New England than was the Catholic part of Boston, and Frank himself boasted that, though his family had for 6 generations lived in New England, he was no tight Yankee, but in his efficiency, his salesmanship, the complete Pan-American business executive. He was a tall man, Tasbro, with a yellow mustache and a monotonously emphatic voice. He was 54, 6 years younger than Doremus Jessup, and when he had been 4, Doremus had protected him from the results of his singularly unpopular habit of hitting the other small boys over the head with things. All kinds of things. Sticks and toy wagons and lunch boxes and dry cow flops. Assembled in his private barroom tonight after the Rotarian dinner were Frank himself, Doremus Jessup, Maderi Cole, the miller, Superintendent of Schools Emil Staubmeier, R.C. Crowley, Roscoe Conkling Crowley, the weightiest banker in Fort Beulah, and rather surprisingly, Tasbro's pastor, the Episcopal minister, the Reverend Mr. Falk, his old hands as delicate as porcelain, his wilderness of hair silk soft and white, his unfleshly face betokening the good life. Mr. Falk came from a solid Knickerbocker family, and he had studied in Edinburgh and Oxford along with the General Theological Seminary of New York. And in all of the Beulah Valley there was, aside from Doremus, no one who more contentedly hid away in the shelter of the hills. The barroom had been professionally interior decorated by a young New York gentleman with the habit of standing with the back of his right hand against his hip. It had a stainless steel bar, framed illustrations from La Vie Parisienne, silvered metal tables, and chromium-plated aluminum chairs with scarlet leather cushions. All of them except Tasbro, Maderi Cole, a social climber to whom the favors of Frank Tasbro were as honey and fresh-ripened figs, and Professor Emil Staubmeier, were uncomfortable in this parrot-cage elegance, but none of them, including Mr. Falk, seemed to dislike Frank's soda and excellent scotch, or the sardine sandwiches. "And I wonder if Thad Stevens would have liked this either," considered Doremus. "He'd have snarled, old cornered catamount, but probably not at the whiskey." "Doremus," demanded Tasbro, "why don't you take a tumble to yourself? All these years you've had a lot of fun criticizing, always being agin the government, kidding everybody, posing as such a liberal that you'll stand for all these subversive elements. Time for you to quit playing tag with crazy ideas and come in and join the family. These are serious times, maybe 28 million on relief and beginning to get ugly, thinking they've got a vested right now to be supported. And the Jew communists and Jew financiers plotting together to control the country. I can understand how, as a younger fellow, you could pump up a little sympathy for the unions and even for the Jews, though, as you know, I'll never get over being sore at you for taking the side of the strikers when those thugs were trying to ruin my whole business, burn down my polishing and cutting shops. Why, you were even friendly with that alien murderer Carl Paschal, who started the whole strike. Maybe I didn't enjoy firing him when it was all over. But anyway, these labor racketeers are getting together now with communist leaders and determined to run the country, to tell men like me how to run our business. And just like General Edgeways said, they'll refuse to serve their country if we should happen to get dragged into some war. Yes, sir, a mighty serious hour, and it's time for you to cut the cackle and join the really responsible citizens." Said Doremus, "Yes, I agree it's a serious time. with all the discontent there is in the country, to wash him into office. Senator Windrip has got an excellent chance to be elected president next November, and if he is, probably his gang of buzzards will get us into some war just to grease their insane vanity and show the world that we're the huskiest nation going. And then I, the liberal, and you, the plutocrat, the bogus Tory, will be let out and shot at 3 a.m. Serious? Huh. Rats, you're exaggerating, said R.C. Crowley. Doremus went on. If Bishop Prang, our Savonarola in a Cadillac 16, swings his radio audience and his League of Forgotten Men to Buzz Windrip, Buzz will win. People will think they're electing him to create more economic security. Then watch the terror. God knows there's been enough indication that we can have tyranny in America. The fix of the southern sharecroppers, the working conditions of the miners and garment makers, and our keeping Mooney in prison so many years. But wait till Windrip shows us how to say it with machine guns. Democracy. Here and in Britain and France, it hasn't been so universal as sniveling slavery as Nazism in Germany. Such an imagination-hating, pharisaic materialism as Russia, even if it has produced industrialists like you, Frank, and bankers like you, R.C., and given you altogether too much power and money. On the whole, with scandalous exceptions, democracy's given the ordinary worker more dignity than he ever had. That may be menaced now by Windrip. All the Windrips. All right. Maybe we'll have to fight paternal dictatorship with a little sound patricide. Fight machine guns with machine guns. Wait till Buzz takes charge of us. A real fascist dictatorship. Nonsense, nonsense, snorted Tasbro. That couldn't happen here in America, not possibly. We're a country of freemen. The answer to that, suggested Doremus Jessup, if Mr. Falk will forgive me, is the hell it can't. Why, there's no country in the world that can get more hysterical, yes, or more obsequious than America. Look how Huey Long became absolute monarch over Louisiana, and how the Right Honorable Mr. Senator Berzelius Windrip owns his state. Listen to Bishop Prang and Father Coughlin on the radio. Divine oracles to millions. Remember how casually most Americans have accepted Tammany grafting and Chicago gangs and the crookedness of so many of President Harding's appointees? Could Hitler's bunch or Windrip's be worse? Remember the Ku Klux Klan? Remember our war hysteria when we called sauerkraut Liberty Cabbage and somebody actually proposed calling German measles Liberty Measles? And wartime censorship of honest papers? Bad as Russia. Remember our kissing the, well, the feet of Billy Sunday, the million-dollar evangelist, and of Amy McPherson, who swam from the Pacific Ocean clear into the Arizona desert and got away with it? Remember Voliva and Mother Eddie? Remember our Red Scares and our Catholic Scares, when all well-informed people knew that the Ogpoo were hiding out in Oskaloosa, and the Republicans campaigning against Al Smith told the Carolina Mountaineers that if Al won, the Pope would illegitimize their children? Remember Tom Heflin and Tom Dixon? Remember when the hick legislators in certain states, in obedience to William Jennings Bryan, who learned his biology from his pious old grandma, set up shop as scientific experts and made the whole world laugh itself sick by forbidding the teaching of evolution? Remember the Kentucky Knight Riders? Remember how trainloads of people have gone to enjoy lynchings? Not happen here. Prohibition, shooting down people just because they might be transporting liquor. No, that couldn't happen in America. Why, where in all history has there ever been a people so ripe for a dictatorship as ours? We're ready to start on a children's crusade, only of adults, right now. And the Right Reverend Abbots Windrip and Prang are all ready to lead it. Well, what if they are? Protested R.C. Crowley. It might not be so bad. I don't like all these irresponsible attacks on us bankers all the time. Of course, Senator Windrip has to pretend publicly to bawl the banks out, but once he gets into power, he'll give the banks their proper influence in the administration and take our expert financial advice. Yes. Why are you so afraid of the word fascism, Doremus? Just a word, just a word. It might not be so bad with all the lazy bums we got panhandling relief nowadays and living on my income tax and yours. Not so worse to have a real strong man like Hitler or Mussolini, like Napoleon or Bismarck in the good old days, and have him really run the country and make it efficient and prosperous again. In other words, have a doctor who won't take any back chat, but really boss the patient and make him get well whether he likes it or not. Yes, said Emil Staubmeier. Didn't Hitler save Germany from the red plague of Marxism? I got cousins there, I know. Hmm, said Doremus, as often Doremus did say it. Cure the evils of democracy by the evils of fascism. Funny therapeutics. I've heard of their curing syphilis by giving the patient malaria, but I've never heard of their curing malaria by giving the patient syphilis. Think that's nice language to use in the presence of the Reverend Falk? Raged Tasbro. Mr. Falk piped up. I think it's quite nice language and an interesting suggestion, Brother Jessup. Besides, said Tasbro, this chewing the rag is all nonsense anyway. As Crowley says, might be a good thing to have a strong man in the saddle, but it just can't happen here in America. And it seemed to Doremus that the softly moving lips of the Reverend Mr. Falk were framing, "The hell it can't." Chapter 3.